Good evening. I'm Taryn Ashby, welcoming you to this live event. I'd like to thank everyone for taking time this evening to join us. Tonight, Senator James Malone will take your calls as he introduces himself as the newly elected senator for the 36th District. Senator Malone will also be taking questions live during this discussion. As a reminder, if you have a question and you'd like to join the conversation, please press star 3 on your keypad to participate. Again, that's star 3 on your keypad. So without any further delay, let me welcome State Senator James Malone.
Thank you, Taryn. Good evening. As everyone has just said, this is State Senator James Andrew Malone. Welcome to this telephone town hall. This is for our friends and neighbors within the 36th Senate District. I'd like to thank everyone who is taking time out of their schedule to participate on tonight's call. Whether you ask a question or just prefer to listen to the conversation, I appreciate your engagement. If you'd like to ask a question at any time during tonight's discussion, press star 33 on your phone. As Taryn said earlier, tonight we will be spending the next hour getting acquainted with one another. This will be my first town hall since being sworn in on May 5th. It is an honor to be your senator, and I look forward to answering some of your questions. So let's take some callers. As mentioned repeatedly by myself and Taryn, if you want to come in, press star 3 on your phone to ask. All right, so let's get started.
All right, so we're going to start with a question that was submitted online. So Amanda asked, what inspired you to get involved in public service and politics? Was there a specific moment that shaped your path?
Okie dokie. I'm specifically motivated with a desire to serve, to kind of stand in the gap between what people have and what they need, which I spoke of a bit when I was sworn in on May 5th. Growing up, my maternal grandmother was a really big example in that. I also had being able to grow up in a middle-class neighborhood through the HUD program with my biological mother and my siblings. When I was a kid, we had a neighbor, Officer Sherman, noticed that my siblings and I were, you know, malnutritious. We weren't getting enough food to eat. And he brought my mother along to get on the food subsidies, you know, which were something that we desperately needed for a short period of time, at that time. So we need people like Officer Sherman, like my maternal grandmother, who do bridge that gap for folks, and we need resources on the other end for them to be able to provide. So that's basically where I am and what my public service means to me to be in there.
Awesome. We're going to go live with Molly. Molly, you are live.
Oh. Hi, my name is Molly Dong. I met you when you spoke to the effort of Democrats, and I told Taryn, I think it was, how delightful it was to hear a compassionate, dedicated person willing to take on the role that you have taken on. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Appreciate the well wishes. What's your question?
Her call dropped out.
Okay.
So there's a submitted question by David. After two terms as mayor of East Petersburg, what motivated you to run for the state senate, and how do you envision this new role enhancing your ability to serve people?
So I was looking for the next opportunity to serve with the possibility of running at a state level, and this seat came up. So it was an easy transition because I was already looking to do that. As mayor, I was very aware of the challenges facing our community, our first responders. I was excited by the opportunity to raise to the next level, you know, with decisions that are actually made about what resources are available to municipalities like the borough that I served in. And also after, you know, working as mayor for two terms, I'm particularly excited about being on the local government committee to kind of find new ways to support the first responders and our local municipalities in being able to fit that gap. And so that is really where I'm at and why I came in for that.
Thank you. As a quick reminder, if you would like to ask the senator a question, please press star 3 on your telephone at any time. Let's keep on going. So Anne asks, how has your experience as a mayor shaped your approach to these new possibilities or new responsibilities in the Senate? Are there specific lessons or challenges from your time as a mayor that you believe will influence your work in the Senate?
So when I was a mayor, residents approached me about some tough issues in their neighborhood. Two particular instances. One was about drugs, and one was about the human trafficking. The residents cared. They were sincere, but they also were afraid to be involved. So they reached out to me and gave me details, and then I was able to stand in that gap to reach out to the officers, talk to them, and work out, you know, what needed to happen next. Being able to be that person that folks can lean on when they care, but they don't know what to do, or they're not sure how to solve the solution, or they're worried for themselves or their own families, stepping in, is something that I really care about doing and being. You know, I've learned that it's often not the loudest voice that needs the most help, and that you have to listen, right? And so you have to meet people where they are, hear what they need, and then again, you know, try to bridge that gap. You know, try to fill that need. So I hope that answers the question.
Thank you. As a quick reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 3 at any time during this call. Another question, with a demanding career in public service, how do you maintain balance with your personal life and family? Are there particular routes or practices that help you stay grounded?
I walk my dog every day, sometimes more than once. She is 10 years old, so I guess our equivalent of late 50s, so about equal to myself, and likes to get out and move, but also has some joint problems, so you got to move slow, right? So I get out, and I get a little bit into nature. I'm lucky enough that our townhouse backs up against some farms and some natural areas and a riparian buffer, so I'm able to get some great pictures, listen to some great birds, see some deer from time to time, and a fox. And a lot of that, like reconnection, my kids would say touching grass, really helps out. In addition to that, I take time to check in every day with my fiance. She's also a very busy career person, and, you know, we you know, keep each other, keep our heads near the ground, right? You keep one foot on the ground and your head in the clouds. That's not too bad. I also spend time every week reaching out and talking with my children, checking up on them, seeing what they're doing in their lives. And, that's really just trying to keep those regular routines. Maybe read a short story if I have time.
Thank you, Senator. We are going to go live with Mary. Mary, you are live.
Hi, Senator. This is Mary. My husband and I travel back and forth from Ephrata to Lancaster, and Route 222 is a mess.
South where it meets
30. And they closed off the exit to Brownstown only to, redirect the traffic to stay on that road and then direct you off, in 20 feet. And I just don't know how people haven't died there. And I don't know who's running it. I never see anybody working on a road. And I don't even know who to call, even if I could just find someone to call and say, what's going on?
Got you. Well, if I'm understanding your question, you're wanting to know who to call about what the plan and what is happening there at the traffic, you call PennDOT. If you wanted to call our district office here, we could, take that information and lay all that out for you, who to contact and that kind of thing. But I do know that, PennDOT has a lot of crews out working, and, they hit every summer and go through a lot of work. And I can understand that sometimes those reroutes and alterations while they're trying to get something new put in are always a little bit problematic. But that is who you would contact with us. Detail.
Thank you, Senator. We are going to go live with Deborah. Deborah, you are live.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can.
Hi, James.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah. Good. Good, and you?
Good, good.
So my question to you, is the Senate getting any closer to passing radar enforcement by our police?
I certainly hope so, Deb. So as you know, this has been a docket asked every year for a good long while. I've actually joined on with one of the newest bill rounds to try and get us through that. So we'll have to see, but we really need to get those through. And I have been talking with the Radar Coalition, what do I need to do to join up and all that. And, we are having those conversations. This round is SB 542. And honestly, we'll certainly try, right? I know there's a lot of folks that would like to see that put in place. And this variant, in case you're not aware, tries to resolve the longstanding argument that it would be a moneymaker by taking anything that's over 5% of the municipal budget and redirecting it to the state police for safe traffic safety measures and work, so that way we remove at least that argument from the pyre. But the biggest concern there for everyone that has experience in municipalities is, you know, the safety. Throughout the state, every municipality does traffic studies and speed studies and continually collects information. But what we need is a safer and more consistent way of being able to intervene with those speeders, you know, individuals that are, you know, literally through whatever is going on in that moment, putting other people at risk because of their speed. And so hopefully we will get it through, but we'll have to see.
Thank you, Senator. Just a quick reminder for anyone on the call right now, if you would like to join in on the conversation and ask the Senator a question, you can absolutely do so by just pressing 3 on your keypad. Senator, we are going to move on and go live with Anthony. Anthony, you are live.
Hi, I'm Anthony. My question is, what is your stance on adult recreational marijuana, and do you think it is in the near future for Pennsylvania?
So what is my stance on adult recreational marijuana? So for me personally, as long as we are safe and thorough in how we set it up and run it, I don't see a problem with it. I do have concerns about the very small groups that can have very bad reactions to it, because a lot of times they don't know who they are. But for me, it's not a top priority. But again, I'm willing to work with anyone on both sides of the aisle to try and, you know, create a path forward. Again, make sure that we're safe, make sure that any economic benefits are equal for the whole state. And then, you know, we'll see what happens for it.
All righty, Senator, we are going to go live with Sue. Sue, you are live.
Hi. My question has to do with your thoughts on the minimum wage being raised to $15 for the state of Pennsylvania. I personally don't believe that minimum wage was ever meant to be a living wage. I always felt that it was important to be a starting wage for students in school, college, or unskilled workers to have a way to be able to earn money and learn skills. Although I do believe that the minimum wage for Pennsylvania should be raised, not to 15, maybe $9 or $10, I think that would be a good starting point. I just want to know what your thoughts are on it.
So the reason I support the $15 minimum wage is really about respecting hard work and the people who do it. And the minimum wage hits folks that are working in, trade work, carpentry, roofing. It's not just the individual who is slinging burgers at a McDonald's, which I know that tends to be the folks that, you know, we think of. I know there's the Keystone Research Center has stuff that it says that raising the wage would be roughly 34,000 workers would benefit in our district. 30% of the workers are age 40 or over. and 40% of the workers are full-timers. So I know our colleague Senator Taglione introduced SB 19 in April. That would raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. And it would also grant municipalities freedom to set the wage for their regions. There is a companion bill to that moving through the House. So I, you know, am going to continue to try to encourage my Republican colleagues to also consider joining on for that legislation. But again, for me, it's not about the folks that are doing the starting jobs or the, you know, the move on jobs. It's the folks that are doing, work that, you know, is skilled work that they really do need, to be brought forward. And if we can set that new baseline, I think that that's important. And I think 15 an hour is a pretty moderate to low adjustment comparing to where it was at 7 an hour if you do all the, you know, current cost dollars up. So anyway, I hope that answers the question.
Thank you, Senator. Quick reminder, if you want to join on the call and ask the Senator a question, please press *3 on your keypad at any time. Senator, we're going to go live with Bob. Bob, you are live.
Hello, this is Bob from East Tentfield, and my question is, what's the most interesting thing you learned or the most surprising thing you've learned in your months as a Pennsylvania state senator?
Most interesting thing I've learned and the most surprising thing I've learned in the as senator. So I think the most interesting has been the etiquette and adjusting to the etiquette within the Senate. I think the most surprising is how well, for the majority of items and issues, everybody does work together. I don't know exactly what I was expecting when I came up, because of course every experience kind of adjusts how you were thinking about the experience before it. But I think that would be the most interesting and the most surprising.
All right, so our next caller is Kurt. Kurt, you are live.
Yeah, hello, Senator Malone. My question is, how do you view the current condition of state funding for public education in Pennsylvania? What direction do you think we should be going in? And how do you regard charter and cyber charter schools?
So I think right now Governor Shapiro's budget proposals for the education for the public funding is a pretty good start. I really do think that we need to work on better way of you know, funding everyone, in addition to, of course, following our, you know, court obligation. So I do think that, you know, we need to, work forward on all of those things. I know in, some previous communications I had mentioned that, you know, I am a father of adult children now, but children who have autism. So I know the special education funding that's needed. I think the $40 million increase in the budget is a good start towards helping those kind of things. And I think, you know, covering the school breakfast, you know, I know a lot of people be like, well, that doesn't, education, it helps a child who's not hungry, learns better, does better. And I think that spending that message even to the child that it's like your community cares enough to make sure that you're eating is a good push forward on education there as well. Anyway, also on regard to cyber and cyber charters, I'm personally supporting the statewide based cyber tuition rate at 8,000 students a year. I think that that's just a start to try to equalize things. You know, I've long said that we should keep public funding for education in public education. So, you know, I think that that's something that'll take us a lot of work and discussion. You know, we don't want profiteering off of our kids, right? We want our kids educated. And so we all need to have those discussions. We also have a lot of need in our education system for improvement in infrastructure, sizing, growth and correcting aging buildings and all of that kind of stuff too. So that is another point that I think that the budget does present to do. I think it has an increase for those funds of $25 million. I think that that's a good, helpful presentation on that. So I know that was a bit rambly, but I hope I answered the question.
Thank you, Senator. Mark submitted a question online asking, we are headed into budget negotiations, and I'm curious what you think about Governor Shapiro's proposed budget and what your priorities are.
Well, I was kind of already on that spent because of answering the education thing, but yeah, let me get a little bit further on that. So as far as my priorities, I'm trying to check for education. So I mentioned a lot of that already. That's already in the budget. The healthcare access, the minimum wage, which, you know, we talked about a bit beforehand, public safety, which we have in the budget, there's 30 million for firefighters and safe recruiting grants that I think will be a great assistance. There's calls to cover cancer screening for firefighters every year. Which I think is actually really important because the majority of our firefighters are volunteers, and they're, whether they're volunteer or paid, they're putting their lives on the line every day, and a lot of the materials that they're using have been shown to be cancer producing, and so having that check is just a way for us to have their backs. There's also another $14.5 million that goes into state police candidate classes. You know, majority of you may be aware, we have a large number of our municipalities that our state police are their only police force. So I think a lot of those are very helpful. In our district, we have a lot of needs to kind of rework our transportation, as far as our, you know, public transit, as far as our roads, our bridges. And so I think a lot of that could really continue to use help from the budget. And, of course, we also want to really carry on some workforce development. We've seen a lot of success in Lancaster County with individuals getting that retraining, whether it's skilled work in HVAC or welding. You know, the list is long. And having those programs and helping develop those programs to reach more individuals, whether it's a non-traditional individual shifting careers or getting to a more skilled location, or it's someone coming straight out of high school, we really need to, I think, invest in that.
Thank you, Senator. We are going to go live with Elise. Elise, you are live.
Hi.
Elise, are you there?
Okay, hi, Elise. What's your question?
The Medicare budget with people with disabilities, what would you do if they cut it? Or, what's the word? They cut it or they discontinue it for people with disabilities, because I don't want them to cut it, because my friends receive it in life insurance, and they don't want them to cut the funding. And I don't want to see people with my friends with disabilities receive their waiver and their insurance get cut.
No, I can understand that. Honestly, we're trying to do everything we can to persuade our federal legislators to not cut the Medicare funding. It's a big deal. But as far as that conversation and how we're going to prioritize things, it's really going to need to rely on our federal level, you know, groups right now. Of course, the Republican leadership at the federal level is, as you said, going through with this big beautiful bill, they call it. Honestly, I think it's a disaster for folks here in Lancaster. And, you know, as you said, you know folks, and I am know folks that, you know, do need, those, coverages, in order to, survive, in order to carry on their, regular lives. So I know that, the Senate, the state Senate, the state House, are all looking at what we can possibly do to, again, try and stand in that gap. And a lot of it depends on how what we're able to get out of the federal government and what we can depend on in there. So one thing you can do, just like myself and my colleagues are doing, is, you know, write your, you know, your federal representatives, your federal, senators, and, encourage them, to keep those, benefits, for our neighbors. And again, we will try and do what we can at the state level. But I'm sure your friends also understand that that is a gigantic program and that touches a lot of people's lives.
Thank you, Senator. We are going to go live with Dolores.
Hi, Senator. Hi, Senator Malone.
Hi, Dolores.
First of all, I want to congratulate you on your win. It was very refreshing. And I've been listening to your responses. They are very measured and they're very informed, and I'm very pleased with that. My question is, you've sort of hinted at it before, it's the atmosphere that you're finding in Harrisburg between particularly two parties. Is there good camaraderie? I think you hinted at that. Is there an effort for both sides to come to good compromises?
I think there are efforts like that. We see it a lot in the daily runs of bills. We also see some things that are very problematic in that we have severe differences about. And I don't think that that precludes us from coming up with a solution, but there are some severe differences. For the most part, though, everyone is trying to work towards a solution that is a benefit to their constituents. I think sometimes there is a disconnect between, sometimes we talk to each other, we're all using the same words, but we have very different meanings based on our background and our understanding or our lens that we see the world from. So there is a lot that still needs to be done to get a more orderly progress that helps everybody. But I do think that the mentality of doing the most good with the least harm is not unique to me in the state, in the Senate, or in the House of Representatives. So I do feel like we will be able to come to some resolutions that will be beneficial for the majority of our folks. Okay, so I really appreciate it. This has been a great discussion. I hope you all feel so too. Thank you for participating in our first town hall discussion. If you didn't have a chance to ask a question, please remain on the line. You'll be able to leave your question on a voicemail for me, and then we will get back to you. Thank you again for your participation. If you have any additional questions or concerns, please call my office at 717-627-0036 or simply visit my website at senatormalone.com. Thank you again, and good night.